is the Great Shalom Broadcast, proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Sharon Sarles. This is the Great Shalom. And I started this out because I was asked to share what I was doing, what I did for my grandsons to bring them back from vegetable to really honor students. And so the focus of this broadcast is normally helping students with learning problems, but that seems to be connected with a lot of other things. So I don't specifically do many things. I don't do parenting, really, but mothering gets involved, and I don't do health specifically, but brain health is certainly involved. And today I'm going to talk about education. Folks, I have seen the future, the bad side of the future.
That is if you do nothing, right? If we talk about problems, it's in order to solve them. So that's not negative. That's the most positive. So I explicitly am telling you this because I expect you to go out and change it and make the future a bright kingdom of God future, yes?
And it is more of the same and more of the same. And you need to know, and if this is not an argument for homeschooling or Christian school, man, I do not know what it is. So I was participating in a group that used to be a Christian group. And over the decades, I have been involved with it. And originally, it aspired to being a sojourners group. So originally, that meant both evangelical in theology and outward focused in terms of contributing to society, particularly the poor in society. And it has changed into something completely different. And it was a leaderless group, and as you suspect, then the greatest bully took over. So, but I am trying to focus here on the rewriting of history. So one of the people, and an altruistic fellow, well-educated, well-connected, who has spent his life in attempting to improve society, although one might critique it as tilting at windmills, but certainly altruistically, at the cost of his own income-earning ability, has done really high-level work on his topic, his campaign. And so he now is reading a book that apparently purports to be a history book about another country.
According to this book, the Native Americans were completely peaceful until the Europeans arrived. That's not true. That they were more advanced economically. That's not true. And that they were more advanced socially. And of course, there were some points in economics and politics that were good and were actually adopted by the Americans. And the Europeans brought much advancement and some negatives, and that's true. So I would suggest a more balanced and more professional history, such as perhaps the Illustrated History of Canada, edited by Craig Brown and published by Lester Publishing, and probably many others. But when you have the suggestion that everything European was necessarily bad and the Native Americans were demigods, then clearly you have some fiction with a political motivation, and it's not hard to see what that is in today's world, because the democratic institutions based on equality and the general uplift based on free trade is being put down by anti-democratic interests in our political discussion today. And so this sort of history plays into that in a way that is nefarious.
And he's saying that his new work is going to be restoring. This will be a therapy, is restoring. But the history that he was giving me of this country, I happen to recently have read history of this country. I lived in that country for 10 years. And everything that he was saying was complete fiction. I'm sorry, complete fiction. Complete fiction. And not surprisingly, everything that came from Europe was bad. Now, when Europe came and colonized Canada, it was far from perfect. And I have a whole lot of criticism of the seigneurial system of France that was brought to New France, but he was not aware of any of that. And he was talking about, you can see he knows it only from this book, because he was talking about the Métis. Okay, so the Métis, yes, Europeans intermarried with Indians, with Native Americans. But do not embroider. This is not an embroider. This is a complete fiction, right? This is a fantasy story. So it is true that there were social structures and political structures, particularly in the Seneca and the Iroquois, that we adopted in the United States, but most of our political thinking was rooted in Locke, Montesquieu, and frankly, the Great Awakening. But it did not come from Native Americans who were all at peace. No, there was an ongoing warfare. And it is not true that they did not ever oust anybody. In fact, they killed the women. If the warrior were dead, then the woman often was frozen to death. These are things that we all know. And if you know these people, you know they're not some angels from heaven. They're human beings. And I know some tribes are more violent than others. If you go to Central Alberta, you will find that the Native American domestic abuse rate is far greater than that of the European Americans. And yes, I'm sure it's exacerbated by their financial status, but folks, the people I'm talking about have oil under their reservations, so don't give me that. Just, I'm just tired of the fantasy. Now, if it was presented as a fantasy, fine. If it were presented as a critique of what we normally think, a balance, I could swallow it. But as a substitute history, I'm very concerned. And I can see down that not many years in the future, then if someone who actually knows what the facts are, were, say, no, that doesn't happen that way, then they would be castigated, intimidated, and shut up as racist. But look, the facts are the facts. And then I realized the future is probably here. So I said, well, that's lovely fiction, but that's completely contra-historical. And so his new project is going to be to rewrite Texas history. Because Texas, our society, he said, was founded in the Republic of Texas and is all European American. Well, hold the phone, excuse me. The roots of Texas go back far beyond the Republic of Texas. And the Republic of Texas was not all European American. So who was the first president of the Republic of Texas? I mean, yes, it was Sam Houston, not Stephen F. Austin, as he claimed. Sam Houston, but who was the... Yes, well, wait, let's talk about Sam Houston. So he was a racist? Excuse me? The picture that we see of Sam Houston, he is wearing not a European American made coat, not a militaristic European, not an American military jacket, but rather a coat that was given to him by the Alabama Coshatta. That's the official picture that hangs everywhere. Wake up! This guy lives in Austin. Okay, so But who was the vice president, the first vice president of the Republic of Texas? His name was Antonio Navarro. Antonio Navarro was his name. So what I am trying to tell you with that factoid is that Texas has always been multiracial.
Multi-ethnic.
And when the Civil War came, yes, Texas sided with the Confederacy, but there were very, very few slaves in Texas. Yes, and I could talk about Juan Siquin and Bejar, the center of civilization in Texas when we became a republic was what we now call San Antonio. And the county that San Antonio is located in is called Bayer, B-E-X-A-R, Bejar. Okay, so it was a Spanish, well, at that point it was Mexican, but and Texas Rangers are based on a model from Spain. Spain had a huge swath of property out here to patrol, and so they sent out their version of the Rangers. Texas Rangers is based on a model from Spain. So you cannot sell me some story that Texas was only European and racist. That's simply not true. Now, most of the, and then he started bringing up how the Spaniards and the French interacted. So, yes, the Spaniards had missions, and some of the natives participated in that, settled around the missions, and some did not. But quite unfortunately, the French particularly, and the Spaniards to a lesser degree, but still brought disease. And so most of the native Texans were not here when my ancestors came from Tennessee. We came from Tennessee to East Texas about the same times as the Cherokees were coming from Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, and so forth. And yes, there was some competition for land and cattle, and there was some raiding by the natives. The family stories that I know don't include raiding by the European Americans. But let me tell you one particular story. So some cattle were stolen, and Mr. Pinnock and the neighbor saddled up,
expecting to get all the cattle back except the one that had been eaten.
And he said, "Clara, hold dinner." And so two European American men rode off. Well, it was past dinner, about dinner time, a little past. The neighbor came and he was shot up, and he just, you know, shook his head sadly at Clara, which she knew what that meant. And so she said, "Well, come on in and I'll nurse you." And he said, "No, I'm going to ride on." And so she sent her son to ride with the neighbor back to his house. And in the morning, Clara Pinnock told her son, "Hook up the buckboard." And so Clara started driving the buckboard. The neighbor saw her and told her, "Oh, Clara, don't do that." Her face was set like a flint. And she went and she found what had been something of a battleground, and she picked up her husband's body. That was a very brave thing to do, because Clara did not know if she were going to be shot at, but she was not shot at. And do you know why? Because those Native Americans, and the family history doesn't record this, the family story doesn't record this, but I figured it out. Those natives were probably Cherokee. And Cherokee, but if they were some other tribe, those Native Americans respect burial rites. And so they had real respect for a woman who had the courage to go get her husband's body, not knowing if she was going to be shot at, but they were not going to shoot at her because she was just trying to bury the dead. Well, I have a mentor in the ministry who has a really fun
presentation. He calls the Great Speckled Bird, and he plays the banjo singing the Great Speckled Bird, and then he tells the history of the Presbyterians as a people. And in the middle of his presentation, he says, he calls the a certain date, and he says, at such and such a date, I'm sorry, I didn't prepare for this.
We're talking like the 1830s.
Such and such a date, the Presbytery of Alabama had 8,000 people in it. And then 2 years later, he calls such and such a date, and he said, at such and such a date, the Presbytery of Alabama had only 2,000 people in it. 6,000 to 2,000. What happened to the Presbyterians of Alabama? Answer? The federal government removed them. So he's talking about the Trail of Tears. Well, the Cherokees have not always moved together as a singular people. They haven't moved together. So there was always some disagreement. Some people got on the government rolls, and their families are listed, and some refrained. They protested by not participating. And so they may be entirely full-blooded Cherokees, but their name was never on the tribal roll because they didn't participate in getting on the roll at that time. And some of them were living together and were moved off by the federal government to what was then the territories, and now we call the state of Oklahoma. But some of them did not, and some of them came to East Texas. And you'll see that there is a county in East Texas called Cherokee, and right next to that county, there's another county called Houston. That's the county that my family settled. And if you go to the Ramey graveyard, the Ramey Cemetery, as I did with my uncle, and he showed me on the other side of the river is Pennock's grave. This is the first European American, the first marked grave of a European American in the state of Texas, is in the Ramey Cemetery, to show me. And that was the same weekend that I was at Kerrville Folk Festival when we were having the Festival of the Eagle, and Mr. Westermann spoke to me personally about burial rites. Well, you know what? Mr. Westermann's family and my family have exactly the same feeling about burial rites. You know, my family all talk about what's buried with them, whatever. So don't tell me that Texas was founded by a bunch of racists and that our society is only European Americans. That's just nonsense. And then you can go to San Antonio today and you can see some of the leading families, of which some of my family are friends, who have Spanish names. And actually they're Spaniards. They're Spaniards, so you know what? They look like European Americans because, newsflash, Spain is in Europe. But if I said any of this, and probably when I did say it in this meeting, oh, I am a racist, excuse me, but those are the facts. And I am tired of necessary conversation being shut down because of a specious accusation of racism. And so now we're going to completely rewrite history. Well, you know what? We've already done that. So this morning I was listening to a podcast called a Plodcast, and the logo has a buffalo on it. A Plodcast. I have no idea. Doug Wilson is a noted pastor and educator from Idaho, and he was reviewing a book on his podcast, number 134 of Plodcast, that asked the question, did the United States have a Christian founding? You know, I have plenty of education, and I was certainly taught that the founders of the United States were deists. Now, you can only teach that to people who are completely ignorant. But I went to a church in Lubbock, which you know is completely red, almost. It was a 4th of July, and they were speaking about the Christian founders of this nation, and they never once mentioned that we had DS founders, and I walked away from there scandalized. Well, that was some time ago, because since then I've gotten some better education, and in fact, it's true that this nation had Christian founders. Watch David Barton. And don't believe stuff on the internet. They just, because they can't adduce contrary facts, they just try to malign him. Sorry, ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Nearly everybody who signed the Declaration of the Independence had a ministerial education. Not everybody, but the vast majority. And when Benjamin Franklin said, let's pause for a word of prayer,
during the constitutional deliberation,
they didn't just, it wasn't just a political move to take a breather. They got up from their chairs, they went over to the church, hired somebody to preach to them. And there are paintings today, because they couldn't take a photograph, but there are paintings today recording the founders on their knees. And almost all of them believed in Reformed theology, because there were Congregationalists or Presbyterians, Reformed theology. Not everyone, you know, the folks from Maryland were Roman Catholic, and the folks from the delegates anyway from New York were what we call today Episcopalian Church of England at that time. And so, come on, guys. The founding of our nation was specifically Christian. And look at our Constitution. We are taught that this was trying to distance themselves from religion. And that is not true. That's not historically true, and it's not contextually true. That's a fabrication. So the first Bill of Rights has to do with freedom of speech, and that is specifically religious speech. Why? Because they were used to the church critiquing government, because the American Revolution and thought is rooted in the Reformation. And those men were mentored by the men who led the Great Awakening. There is a strong chain here. The first article says Congress shall make no law. The first article, freedom of religion, restrains the government, and specifically Congress. And why? Because 9 of the 12 colonies had an established church. So the point was, we're going to let Protestants freely worship, and we're not going to have conflict between the federal government and the states. And so that was the most important point, because the states wanted to keep their religion, and that the freedom of religion was ensconced, and the government was restrained, and not the other way around, which is always what is happening today in the conversation. And I will adduce one of the least religious was Thomas Jefferson, and I'm going to tell you about his letter to the Danbury Baptists. So he was the one who penned it, although he based it on, for instance, the Constitution of Massachusetts that John Adams wrote. John Adams didn't pen the Declaration of Independence, because he was busy doing committee work. But, okay, so that was the independence. But anyway, and he was off being a diplomat and trying to raise money when the Constitution was constructed. But anyway, we know who he was. We know he was very religious, and that he thought it was his vocation to work in law and politics rather than preach. But that was his first question when he was young: should he preach? So back to Jefferson. So Jefferson was the least religious, and people talk about him cutting up the New Testament. Yes, he cut portions from the four Gospels to make one Gospel. And you know why? Because he hated it? No, because he was constructing a tract with which to evangelize Native Americans. So let's have the rest of the story. And when he was elected, the Baptists wrote to him concerned that their freedoms might be abridged, because now Church of England or some other church might stamp out their right to worship as they chose. And he wrote to them and explained the documents. He was there when they were constructed, no doubt. And he said, no, those documents strongly enforce your freedom of religion. It restrains the government, and not the other way around. But somehow history has been rewritten. And it has been rewritten specifically in order to shut down the contribution from the very corner that founded this nation. And so now we're going to have a further abridgment of our ability to talk. We're now not going to be able to talk about, well, no, that didn't really happen, because we're going to be accused of racism. This doesn't help anybody. Every culture has its own genius and its own faults. And we need to look at those carefully. But there is no question but what the Judeo-Christian religion has made a culture that adopted science and adopted capitalism in the best sense and democracy and equality. And other thought systems have not. Marxism meant a slavery and a poverty and an inequality for all people. That is not what it promised, but that is what it did. Go to the Soviet Union. Go to China. Go to Cuba, and you will find that every single one is moving away from those doctrines because they don't work. So why should we be moving toward them? It is only a plot of the enemy. There is good and there is bad. There is truth and there is falsehood. There is godliness and there is perversion. And we can talk about what's godly. Yes, let's do that. But let's not have that conversation shut down because we are going to start worshiping perversity, falsehood, and evil. So this is coming to a school near you. It's important that your children actually know American history. Real American history. Real American government philosophy. And now, every other history. Because somebody thinks it is their new life's calling to do restoring, that will be a fiction. I will close down any discussion based on truth and facts, intimidating you by calling you a racist.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom Broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come. The Great Shalom Broadcast is here to bring hope, health, and healing for children and youth by inspiring, informing, equipping parents and educators. For more information on today's program or today's offer, simply log on to greatshalom.org or email info@greatshalom.org.